You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
call may be recorded or transcribed. Ghetto people, you gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Get some people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
What your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a rare disease.
I'm running like a rare disease. Get some people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good weekend. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping, too, that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But, of course, if it is not, and it has to get done, it must get done, it will get done. Because you'll get it done. Because you got the will to do it. Ashe. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that, and the drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. And there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. This program, once again, is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. On Thursdays from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., the Black Liberation Movement, Mississippi on the Move, with Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. Today, Friday at 8 p.m. this evening, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Tomorrow, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., the Sankofa Council of Elders with Dr. Janine. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Okay, go right to the Inye Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Put my glasses on, definitely need them. The Inye Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought, October 3rd. All future victories will be defeats unless you master this ability to think correctly and to properly discern. Olatunji Mwamba. Lest we forget, wielding power over others through terrorizing acts of death, destruction, and domination is Yorugu's nature. It is fundamental to their definition of themselves and the world they covet. We can never assume that they will change because of any goodness purported to be lying dormant in their hearts. History teaches us that they never have, and there is no reason now to believe that they will ever change. Every warrior's greatest weapon is remembrance. It is critical that they remember that we are dealing, excuse me, family, that we are dealing with a mind that most seeks pleasure and that pleasures itself mostly through the corruptions of innocence. A mind that sees its own damaged self has the idea toward which all else must be completely turned. It will not change. It is completely satisfied with its twisted interpretation of reality and destructive, invasive behavior. Why would it see reason to change when what they have done and the reality that they have carved out of human skin is what they most desire? Affirm. I conversate to nation build. Affirm. I conversate to nation build. Yes, nation time. October 4th. The hen knows it's daybreak, but allows the rooster to make the announcement. An Ashanti proverb. The hen knows it's daybreak, but allows the rooster to make the announcement. I say. There's much to see in our story, which reflects the equality which traditionally exists between our men and women. Proverbs like "a man chases a woman until she catches him." If a man sees a snake and a woman kills it, what matters is that the snake does not escape. And the one above thoroughly brings this to mind. The sense of all three is of the unspoken power of both men and women individually, as well as an empowered duality. These and a great number of other proverbs and sayings speak to the African idea that just because a man is performing a particular task does not mean that a woman cannot do it as well or even better, and vice versa. It is more a matter of choice and an agreement, sometimes silent agreement, than anything else. Much wisdom often brings out of our women's sanctity, the prudence of those who most often defer by choice, not out of fear or ignorance, but humility, patience, and knowing. These are statements about the foresight and insight of women, if you will, relative to the male ego, as she quietly but knowingly allows him to strut about loudly making pronouncements. Yeah, sisters, I love y'all. Affirm. I unerringly know my role, and it is and its contribution to the whole. Affirm. I unerringly know my role and its contributions to the whole. October 5th. In a warrior's mind, fear begets fearlessness, struggle solidifies strength, faith forges fortitude. After purpose follows play. After pain arises peace. And after suffering comes sovereignty. Mualimu Shabazz. Spirit suppresses all we see about us at any particular point in this dimension we call time. Bearing this in mind, we must always spiritually configure our minds relative to what we see as quantitative and qualitative advantages and disadvantages along warrior lines. It is important for enemies to make warriors believe that we are at a disadvantage in terms of numbers and the potential for victory based on reported trends and general levels of consciousness. It is the business of enemies to prevent any our historical insight, which will lend credibility to our viability. This will enable them to keep us singularly focused on this particular demoralizing moment in time. We have been and always will be the warrior majority. Since our beginning, the vast majority of Africans on this planet have been warriors. The vast majority of us have sought to gain and maintain liberation, empowerment, sovereignty for our people. Our current situation should not confuse us on that fact, and it should be the only measuring rod of the state of our front line. It cannot be limited to this moment in an ongoing war. a moment is more than just a moment. It is a part of a continuum. Therefore, in counsel to warriors, know that your power and ability to produce change in whatever direction you choose is based on your interpretation of our historical reality, and self has an intergenerational force in it. Your movement, your motivation, your possibilities are all determined by your vision and knowledge of the past. Ashe. Affirm. I see the reason in my pain. Embrace it as purposeful. Affirm. I see the reason in my pain and embrace it as purposeful. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sesem of daily revolutionary thought. Ashe. We had we talked about Marsalis Williams Wednesday and the fact that the state of Missouri killed him, put him to death. And of course, that's not the first time they've done that. They've done that many other times, especially as it relates to us. I just saw a Caucasian one, guy on, I can't remember what state it was, but there's many people who are arguing that this man should not be put to death. He is to be put to death in November next month. You know, supposedly he shook his 4 or 5 year old child in the shaken baby syndrome kind of thing, shook her to death, and he was adamant that he didn't do it. And then come to find out, the child had a lot of other illnesses. That's something they didn't take into account. When they went through the trial process and then ultimately convicted him. And he's been in prison for 20-something years. So, yeah. So I hope I can be aware when they either stay his execution or they execute him. I hope they stay his execution. You know, especially, you know, that's the thing. You know, I'm against the death penalty. I'm against capital punishment, because if you got capital, you don't get capital punishment. I'm against wrongful convictions and so forth. A lot of these other things, because I believe in justice and righteousness. And even though we live in a society with some hellified people, I still want justice, even for them. Marsalis Williams poem. Once again, Brother Marsalis Williams was put to death last week by the state of Missouri. They definitely didn't have to do it. The prosecutors were saying, don't do it. There was another judge that said, don't do it. The former governor, they did it anyway. This poem is by Leslie Henre. Sister Henre, she has penned some really good stuff. And so this poem is a poem for Marsalis Williams. When Missouri sat down for dinner tonight, the justice system said, ask her what she wanted to eat. And Missouri replied, black men, please. I like them incarcerated with families and dreams, with smiles that are full of light, that bring you to joy and break your heart at the same time. And the justice system said, dry age after years in prison, rehabilitated but left to rot, or farmed to table. Our farmers can pluck one off the street tonight if you wish. Missouri hungrily replied, I like them innocent when the victim's family and the prosecutor protest. Do you have any tamir rices? I'll take that as an appetizer. Save the sweet Sandra Bland for dessert. And the justice system brought the wine list. But it was a waste of time because Missouri only drinks blood. She prefers a vintage 1619. But any full-blooded lynched red will do finally. After some thought and one last look at the menu, Bonteri waves down Mike Persons and says, I like to order a number one, Marcellus Williams. This sounds like a meal I'd love. And the Missouri Supreme Court smiles. We thought you liked that. We saved him just for you. Bon appetit. And Rod Serling doesn't appear. Rod Serling. Twilight Zone. Rod Serling doesn't appear because this isn't the Twilight Zone. This is America. This is a cookbook to serve black mankind in print since 1619. Sister Leslie Henry. Yeah, family. Today, well, not today, but a couple of days ago, it was Nat Turner's birthday, October 2nd. Nat Turner's birthday. Yep. October 2nd, 1800. He died November 11th. Next month. Be his, the date of his death, November 11th, 1831. Excuse me, I need to do something right here, right now. Excuse me, Baba Butch.
Yes, sir.
Hey, my brother, how you doing?
I'm hanging in there, man. I'm just listening to you every day, getting all that good information.
I know, man. I appreciate this. God bless you, man. I really do. I really appreciate you listening and always being there. And, listen, I want to give you that information. I want to mail it to you. I went by Brother Kwaku, and Brother Kwaku has been going through some things, you know, with medically. So
yeah, how's he doing, man?
He's doing good. Hey, man, yeah. He is doing good. Yeah. I was by there the he's other day.
He's a good brother, man.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is, man.
Yeah, he's a very good brother.
So I need to get your address. Do me a favor. I'm going to give you my phone number now. You take my phone number down.
If it's still the same number I had before, I have it.
Then good. Text me. Text me all your information, your address, and so forth, so I can mail this to you ASAP, okay? Believe me.
Okay, well, I'm not really up into the texting thing, but I'll get it to you the best way I can, man.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Wait till after the program, and we'll talk.
Okay. Yeah. So I have your number if you haven't changed it in
the last
6 months.
No, I haven't. Okay. I haven't changed my number in years.
Okay. Well, listen. Like I said, I listen to you every day. If I'm, you know, I haven't been riding because it's too hot.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah, very hot out here. But I'm on top of it. I listen to your program. I enjoy the brother Paul from over on the other side of the pond.
Yes, sir.
He's an interesting fella.
Yes, he is.
I more or less wait for him to get on around. He usually comes on like almost the last guy out.
Right. That's
but,
true.
I don't know him, never seen him, but the stuff that comes out of his
yeah,
his
he's
mind,
passionate. Yes,
pardon me?
Yes, he's passionate.
and on point.
No, not alone just passionate. He's accurate. He's intelligent. Yeah. He's an intelligent cat.
Yeah,
and the thing about it, he's a young guy.
Yeah, he's on point, man. Yeah.
He's a young brother, so I really, more or less, I hang in there for him to come through.
Right on.
You see, because he keeps me on point, man. You know what I'm saying? A lot of stuff, you know. Anyway, I don't want to take up too much of time, but listen, I'll get back to you.
Okay.
One way or the other.
Right. After the program is over, just hang on. After the program is over, after 1 o'clock, and so I can get that information from you. Okay, brother?
Okay, man. Okay.
All right, Baba Butch.
Keep up the good work, man. I enjoy the program.
Thank you, Baba Butch. Preach to you. Peace to you, my brother. Peace.
Okay, 10-4.
Yeah, Baba Butch, man. Yeah. Okay. Nat Turner. Yeah, Nat Turner. It's interesting that Nat Turner was unique in a sense of his intelligence and his ability to learn things very quickly, you know, grasp things. He was a avid reader, even though they really, once Nat Turner did what he did, they, across this country, they really started barring us from reading, you know. They didn't want that to happen no more. No more reading for y'all. Yeah. But, yeah. Nat Turner. Let me play this particular piece. This one. A lot on Nat Turner. This is a Caucasian, but most of them were, but that I seen coming out of YouTube, so. But just a little synopsis and explanations of Nat Turner's rebellion.
Hey guys, welcome to Hip Hughes History. Nat Turner's gonna get you. We're gonna dial the clock back to August 21st, 1831, and travel to Southampton County, Virginia, and witness the largest slave revolt in U.S. history. Let's take a look at the conditions that led to it, what was going on in Nat Turner's head, and what are gonna be the dire consequences following his execution. So here we go, guys. Why don't we go giddy up for the learning and go get her done right now. Nat Turner was born on October 2nd in the year 1800 in Southampton County, Virginia. He was born in that county. He's going to die in that county. He never escaped that county. His mother was a slave brought from Africa. His father was an escaped slave. When he was a young boy, his father escaped. But he was really raised by his grandmother, fiercely anti-slavery and fiercely religious. Now, while it was not illegal to teach a slave to read, it was illegal to teach a slave to write. So Nat learned how to read from one of the sons of his master, the Turner family. First, Benjamin Turner was his master. I hate that word. And then later, his ownership was transferred to his brother, Samuel Turner. But it was said that Nat was an extremely intelligent young boy, that he was always fasting and praying and reading the Bible. And he also, as a young boy and later into young adulthood, had visions. He interpreted these visions as being messages from God, that he was the chosen one. He became a preacher amongst the slaves and some whites as well, reading them the Bible, giving them lessons, and really talking about anti-slavery as it was interpreted from the Bible. You have to remember that Christianity, in a sense, was used by the white culture in the antebellum South in order to pacify slaves, to keep them in their place, to show them the passages where it was said that their race was inferior to the white race. But of course, Nat Turner isn't interpreting that way. Now, when he is at the age of 22, Nat Turner decides, I'm out of here. I'm going to go grab a backpack and hit the woods. And he does that. He escapes at the age of 22. But then he has a grand vision on his escape route, that God comes to him as he sees it and tells him he needs to return, that his mission on earth is laced with slavery. And Nat Turner goes back. He expands his religious teachings amongst the slaves. He was called the prophet by many of his followers. And he is on a projectile to do something great according to the way that he is interpreting things. Now, in 1828, he's going to get what he considers to be the grand version, where Christ himself shows himself to Nat Turner as he's working the fields for his new master, Joseph Travis, and he is basically given the message that he needs to do something, that there needs to be a fight between the kingdom of God and the anti-kingdom. He interprets that as fighting against slavery. So we're getting closer. We got a couple eclipses to get through. Yeah, I said eclipses, and then we're going to have our rebellion. So why don't we go light the match and explode the barn? So by 1831, it's pretty much set that Nat Turner's going to do this rebellion, that that vision in 1821 told him what he had to do. Now, it's false to say that there weren't any other types of rebellions. There certainly were planned rebellions. Denmark Vesey was executed in South Carolina in 1822 for trying to gather thousands of slaves to revolt, but that never materialized. So Nat Turner really has a small group of trusted advisors, if you want to call them that, other slaves that he's confiding in and planning with. Henry, Hark, Nelson, and Sam were four slaves that were associated with the planning of the rebellion. But then in February of 1831, there's a solar eclipse. And you have to remember, there's not a lot of scientific knowledge going on about what a solar eclipse is. So Nat Turner is going to interpret that as being a message from God to get the ball rolling. So him and his small group of slaves plan the insurrection for July 4th of 1831. I'm sure you can figure out why they would pick July 4th. Of course, it's Independence Day. They want that to be their Independence Day. But unfortunately, it's going to be held off for a few more months because Nat Turner falls ill. And then in August of 1831, there's another eclipse. But it's not just an ordinary eclipse. Thousands of miles away, Mount St. Helens had erupted and had thrown so much ash into the sky that this solar eclipse gives the sky really a weird blue-green tint. And Nat Turner believes this is a message from God telling him that you need to do this now. And they do it. August 21st, 1831. And then rather than using muskets, they figure that would draw too much attention to themselves. This is a resurrection with knives and axes and swords, really kind of barbaric instruments in a sense. And they first attack the home of Joseph Travis, and they're going to kill everybody in it. They're going to kill Joseph. They're going to kill his wife. They're going to kill his 9-year-old son. They're going to kill a sleeping hired hand. And in fact, after the killing of the Travis family, two of the slaves return because they forgot to kill the baby in the carriage, which they ended up killing and then throwing its body in the fire. They believed it needed to be gangster in order to spark this civil war, this freedom fight, this good versus evil battle. And then they continued for 48 hours marching towards the county seat. Are you ready for the county seat's name? It's in Jerusalem. I kid you not. And along the way, they're ransacking houses. They're killing all of the white people. They killed 55 to 65 white people. So outside of Jerusalem, their numbers had grown. They had gathered about 75 slaves that they had freed in this insurrection fight. And as they're marching to Jerusalem, they're met by a group of over 200 militia that are mainly local militia, but there were also some federal troops from some of the ships that were docked in the bay at Norwalk. So they're immediately going to be taken down. And eventually, 57 blacks are going to be executed amongst that group. But it's the local militias that are going to kill over 200 blacks. Most of them have nothing to do with the insurrection. It really is a vengeance killing. And it wasn't for 2 weeks before the leader of the militia had to basically tell people, stop killing black people, probably because they were property and it was seen as a loss of property. Now, all of the blacks that were killed, the state actually reimbursed the owners of those slaves for their property loss. There were 15 people acquitted, but 57 blacks were executed. Now, Nat Turner himself escaped. He 2 months was on the lam, and there was actually physical descriptions of him that he was 5'6" to 5'7". He was 155 pounds. He had a very bright complexion. They had his scar locations. He had a scar on his head, a scar on his neck. He had a huge knot on his arm from a previous injury. But eventually, a farmer is going to see some underbrush and remove it and find Nat Turner nearly 2 months after the insurrection and turn him in. Now, Nat Turner is going to be executed. It took like 6 days to execute him. And again, just to make it more ironic, you have to remember that Nat Turner was executed in Jerusalem. And then what they did with the body is sort of a mystery. We know that his skull ended up in Gary, Indiana, but there were published reports in the Negro Journal of History in the early 1900s that Nat Turner's body was actually skinned and that they made purses of it. They made trophies out of bones, and that they were handed out as heirlooms, kind of to show that, you know, this is what happens to people who revolt against slavery. And in fact, many of the blacks that were killed in these kind of insurrections against the insurrections had their heads put on poles. I kid you not. There's actually a stretch of the Virginia State Highway, Route 658, that's called Blackhead Signpost Road to this day. So the insurrection is over, but the legacy of the insurrection is not over, as there really is a huge fear in the white community that something has to be done in order to quell these future insurrections. So why don't we quell some future insurrections? So immediately after the insurrection, there's going to be pressure put on the legislatures in these southern states to do something. Now, Virginia specifically had a rather academic debate about what to do. There were forces of colonization that we should take blacks and ship them back to Africa. And actually, the grandson of Thomas Jefferson Randolph, actually argued for a gradual emancipation, which fell a few votes short of actually kind of going further. But it shows you that there was a debate. But the winners of the debate are going to be the slave owners who want to take that hammer and put it down on the heads of blacks to show them that this is never going to happen again. So ends up being a police bill. The police bill forbid any blacks from having a jury trial, whether you were free or you were slave. Of course, you didn't have it if you were slave. And any free blacks that were convicted of a crime could be sold back into slavery. But then probably the one with the largest effect is going to be the education bills that are passed. It's now going to be a crime to teach freed blacks or slaves not only how to write, but how to read. And it's thought that if they could limit their education, they could limit any future Nat Turners, you know, from bubbling up to the surface. And of course, this is really going to cause abolitionists in the North to go on a crusade in order to try to get literature and education to blacks, both slaves and freed blacks, in the antebellum South. So the Nat Turner Rebellion is going to have huge reverberations across Southern society. Now, all Southern states have, of course, their own legislatures, so there's varying bills and laws. But really, 1831 is seen as a watershed year in terms of the South taking a much harder stance to slow the education of blacks and for there of ever being another type of uprising like the Nat Turner Rebellion. So there you go, guys. Nat Turner, he was going to go get you. And at the end of the day, right before he was executed, they asked him if he had any regrets. And he said, did Christ have any regrets because he was going to be crucified? You could see that Nat Turner sees himself as a prophet, as a Christ-like figure that was brought to earth in order to spark a rebellion between forces of good and forces of evil. So you tell me, is Nat Turner a killer, a murderer? Or is he some type of hero like a John Brown that was leading us out of the wilderness? Leave it down in the comments below. We want to know what you think, of course. And we want to make sure that you check out other videos. So subscribe to Hip Pew's History. We have over 410, 20, 30 videos. There's a whole bunch. And make sure you always remember it because it's always going to be true. Where attention goes, energy flows. We'll see you guys next time that you press my buttons.
Yeah. John Brown. In fact, he met John, Nat Turner met John Brown. Yeah. Yeah. That based upon some information that they put forth. Yeah, he met John Brown. So. So I hope you had a chance to check out the movie. It came out like in 2018. And of course, Nate Parker put the movie out. If you remember, he was the brother that was in The Great Debaters with Denzel and Sister Smollett, you know. And there was some issues because, and they made it an issue. He was dealing with a Caucasian woman, I think it was his wife, I'm not sure, but there were some abuse issues that came to the fore. And I'm quite sure that that had some kind of hit on the production in terms of, as it came out, many people didn't want to see it then. Oh, yeah, you know. But I would hope for many of us that that we would put that to the side and check out the movie, because that's what's most important, to get a good understanding of who John Brown, excuse me, who Nat Turner was and what he did and how he did it. Very intelligent brother. Just like the piece we just played stated that he had visions, and, you know, when people don't know what a eclipse is, you can take all kinds of interpretations of what you're seeing. And how, excuse me, family, and how you proceed. I don't know if I got a short in here or not. I'm going to stop that. So, Nat Turner's testing. Seems like my microphone is acting funny here, family. So I can be doing a lot of movement, I guess. So, but give us a call if you got anything to add to this discussion at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Talking today about Nat Turner. 2 days ago, it was his birthday. And he was born in 1900. He was born in 1900 and died in November 11th of 1900. He was born in 1800. 1800. He was born in 1800, and he died in November of 1831. So he was 31 years old. He was 31 years old when he died. He was married. He had a son. Yeah, he had a son. He became an evangelist, and if you remember the movie, because he was that good in memory and reading and so forth, they allowed him to go to some of the other plantations to preach, because the idea was to preach this particular gospel, to let them know that you must obey your earthly masters. You know, I hate that word as it applies to us. I hate the word slave. There's a lot of words that I wish we would understand and not use, particularly in this language. I could care less about changing the diction and the words of Caucasians. It's their language, it's their stuff. I could care less. But for us, I hate the fact that we use them, that we call each other slaves, and especially noted people in media. It really bothers me, you know, that they continue, oh, yeah, and the slaves, you know. But, yeah, Cherry Turner, that was his wife, and he did have a son. Yeah, so Nate Parker. Yeah, they cut him up, brother. And just as the video I just played you stated, that yeah, they would cut off digits and limbs and so forth. You know, and if you remember, also, there were postcards with hung people on them. you got to understand what we're dealing with, Urugu. You know, they have an insatiable appetite for death, domination, and destruction. It's who they are. It is who they are. And so we do have a caller, Brother Irv. Good afternoon. Good morning still. Definitely for you, good morning. Good morning, Brother Irv.
Yeah. Good morning, Baba Oji. How are you?
I'm doing well, my man. How you doing, brother?
Yeah, it's morning time here. You know, Baba Oji, it was really good to hear Brother Butcher's voice this morning.
Yeah, definitely.
It was good to hear his voice, man. I thought about that, brother. I think about the people that call often and try to hear what they don't say. And that brother is like a walking historian, a walking library.
Yeah.
You know, he has so much in his the knowledge that he has in his head. It's just amazing. But anyway, the Nat Turner thing, when the boy did the movie, I noticed that white people, and I don't say they or them, I try to get away from that. I just say what it is. White people, they're brethren. They're European brethren. They never want to show an American African in a powerful position where he's fighting back, where we're actually plotting to save ourselves, to put this Caucasian down, so that the Caucasian understands that you're not going to dominate us. So anything on television or radio never shows the American African in a powerful position. I mean, they may show him with some money, a house, and a car, but that's not power to me. That's a consumer power. We can't buy our way to freedom. We have to be able to know what power is and what power means. And so, and you give that definition out all the time on the show. What's the definition of power? And white folks are creating your reality. Mm-hmm. They're creating everything that you have,
right,
and making you believe that you did it. You know, I'm nobody tells me what to do, but Oshi, everything you do is a message. Every billboard you see, every commercial, every radio station, sure, this show is a message. Everybody's trying to tell you to do something. And the study should not be on black people. White people only study the American African for the consumer issue and the power dynamic. But the reality is we should study Caucasians.
Right.
Because the Urugu is the most violent, the most egotistical. I mean, you look at their leaders. The Urugu usually reflects the vision of their leaders. You know, when you see a white person that's leading and you're not saying anything about colonies in France, but you put the Olympics in France. But you don't say nothing about they still have colonies here. Well, let's talk about a colony. What is a colony? Is a colony something that helps the people that they're colonizing, or is a colony something that destroys those people and keeps them marginalized and keeps them depending on you? Think about that, Baba Oshi. What these Caucasians do, they act as if they're not doing it.
Well, the thing is, the benefit of the colony is for the colonizer. You know, they don't give a damn about those who've been colonized. It's the colonizer. It's their benefit. Mm-hmm. And that's why when some of them left certain areas, and not just the French but others, they just destroyed the infrastructure they created to extract the mineral wealth from that country, you know, to get it to a railroad or to get it to a seaport or whatever, you know. Because, you know, as they started to gain independence in the late 50s and definitely in the 60s, you know, the whole idea was, oh, yeah, well, we're out of here and we're going to destroy it. And what should have happened, I keep saying it, that if Africans would have organized then when Kwame Nkrumah said it, because he said it once he became the new president of the first country to gain independence, which was Ghana. He said it in 1957. Mm-hmm. You know, it ain't about Ghana or Nigeria or Cameroon or whatever. It's about Africa. We're Africans. We respect the fact that you are a Nigerian and all the cultural groups that are Nigerian. you know, Ibu and so forth, Hausa, whatever. That's cool. But what's most important is we're Africans. And we must come together on that fact and deal with these crackers the way we should to get the kind of compensation that is just and deserving, you know. And because we didn't, Brother Irv, they were able to establish neo-colonialism to this very day. And even in some countries, the colonizer is back physically. He's back. And
because that's where the resources are.
Yeah.
He has to come. He doesn't have the mines. He doesn't have the resources. And Baba Osho, you notice the one thing that the white folks do, and I try to wonder, are these Caucasians that smart? They take your clothes off and put their clothes on you. They take your language out of your mouth and put their language in your mouth. They take your mindset of your beliefs and erase that, and we replace that with their mindset.
Yes.
Their Christianity, their Portuguese, all those things that make you appear to be similar to Erugu.
Right.
We appear to be like, if you close your eyes, there's some black brothers and sisters out here that you can talk to. You wouldn't know if you was talking to a white person or a black person.
Mm-hmm.
Not even by the way they talk and even by what they're saying. You know, I've listened to different people speak. And I'm an American. Who told you you were American? Who told you your nose was ugly? You have to study Erugu. And I heard Sister Soldier say this on the internet. She said, we need to study these psychopaths.
Mm-hmm.
We need to study of people who celebrate death and destruction.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it, Baba Oshie. They're in the Sudan right now. Right now, killing Africans.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't see it on their television. They're not going to show you that. Because they don't want that in your... Erugu understands the power of the mind. You don't have to keep me in jail if I don't know I'm in jail. You don't have to fight me if I don't know I'm in a fight. And that's what when you talk about creating a reality, let's create a reality of calmness. Everything is good. You're doing well.
Mm-hmm.
You got a car to drive. You got a place to stay. Do you have food to eat? You got toilet paper. You're fine.
Yeah, you're doing well.
But Baba Oshi, every empire comes to an end. Every civilization has its ups and its downs, and some are way down. And I do believe that the civilization that we're living in right now, with Erugu appearing to run things, everything is changing. Everybody's moving different now. It used to be a time where you had a war issue. United States would run in there, boom, bam, it's all over.
Right, right,
those days
right.
are over with. Those days are over, Baba Oshi. We don't run in the Falklands and kill folk. We don't sell guns to El Salvador until you can remember these things because they're documented. And don't work like that because now everybody got a bomb.
Yeah.
Like Gil Scott Heron said, first one wants freedom, now everybody wants freedom. And he's absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to have a level playing field. But my concern is with African people. My concern is with my brethren. Because if my brethren's in trouble, I'm in trouble. If Burkina Faso is fighting right now, all of us should be fighting throughout the whole diaspora. We all should be fighting with Burkina Faso, Chad, Niger, and Mali. And stop telling me. I've heard some brothers say we should get rid of these coups. There's not a coup. They're revolutions. They're tired of the foot on their neck. They're tired of the underclass, the permanent underclass.
Mm-hmm.
This has to stop, Baba Oshi, and it's stopping. We're doing things, and
it only stops. But brother Irv, it only stops when we make it stop. When we have the collective mindset to understand our situation, and we make it stop. Otherwise, it will continue, and it will continue to recruit Negroes. You know, agent provocateurs, saboteurs, will continue to choose men and women to do the destructive work that will continue to have us looking at each other with the side eye, you know. Mm-hmm. So it will stop.
The distrust.
Yeah, when mm-hmm. we make it stop, brother. Right on.
Well, I'm going to do my part, Baba Oshie. I'm going to go out and marry me a white woman, and I'm going to help the cause. I'm gonna get me a snow bunny, and I'm gonna help the cause. Apparently, that's how you move up in the United States.
Yeah,
Kamala and the Supreme Court justice and Clarence Thomas.
Right,
and,
right.
I think that's how you do it. If you can't play football, marry a white woman. You know, and I laugh when we say that, but Baba Oshie, but this is real talk. These people really believe that some blue-eyed, straight-haired white man is going to come through the clouds and save them.
Yeah.
That they believe this.
Yeah.
And the closest thing you can get to that is a Caucasian, a white woman, or a white man, whatever confused state that you're living in. But yeah. When you really want to be who you are, and get knowledge of self, Louis Farrakhan talked, and Elijah Muhammad talked about knowledge of self. Never understood what that meant until I understood what that meant. Mm-hmm. Because it comes a time in your life, I'm telling you, it's like the whole name changing thing. When you get to a point where you know what you know, that's when it hits. It's like a light bulb goes off. And my consciousness came like a light bulb. One day I was Herb, hee hee ha ha. The next day I was Herb the Revolutionary. Don't give a damn what you think about me. Come on now. I don't get you. You don't like, okay. Yeah. You know, I'm good. Yeah. But that bulb went off in my head. My ancestor touched me and said, Irv, your name ain't Irvin? I said, well, who am I? Who am I? And you know, I wanted to know who I was. So I started studying.
There you go.
And then I realized there are other books.
There you go.
There are other videos to look at. There are other people to speak
yes.
with. I didn't
yes.
know that. I thought... I'm still thinking George Washington chopped down a cherry tree and he couldn't tell a lie. I believe that. I actually believe Santa Claus. I did. I thought it was real. Yeah. Why wouldn't it be real? Why wouldn't you lie to me? Why would a white? Until I learned my history. Mm-hmm. And Baba Oshie, history is a foundation for the future. So don't get caught up in all y'all talk about is old stuff. Well, the old That's... stuff is what you stand on mm-hmm. to reach the new stuff. Amen? Amen.
I
just
say.
Means you agree.
I say. Oh, that's right.
So we have to have a firm foundation and moving forward. And we have to be, and this is serious work, Baba Oshie.
Yes, it is.
You know, did you say laugh and joke? This but these is, things yeah. that you're putting on this airway
yes.
to 93 million people on the World Wide Web, this is serious business.
Yeah.
This is going directly against everything that the apple pie, Chevrolet, and hot dogs represent. You know? With the diversions, you know, let's get a diversion, brother. Let's watch a baseball game. I don't want to watch no baseball game. I want to free my people. I want self-determination.
I say.
And I don't have to holler and scream at you and be all, I mean, you know, we go, no, let's just do it. Let's just do it, Baba Oshie. And I want to talk to you off air about some things I want to do to correspond and contact our brothers in Africa to let them know that we're supporting them
right on.
In Burkina Faso. We have the internet. You can type right now and send something to the
right.
government of Burkina Faso to let them know that we're supporting them, that
right
we we got your back. It's not always about sending this money and you know, Sally Strutter trying to buy them children for 10 cents a day or whatever. This ain't what we're talking about. We're talking
about
letting our brethren know that in the diaspora that we hear them, we see them, we support them. And if you need a couple dollars, I got a few dollars. I mean, I ain't rich.
No, I'll definitely give to the cause.
Yeah,
I'm down
on,
with
man.
The cause.
It's grassroots.
That's right. I'm down with
so
the
no,
cause.
But no, we in a good mm-hmm. place, Baba Oshie. We're in a good place because we're able to. They haven't stifled our communication. If you notice, the first thing they do is stifle your communication. You mm-hmm. guys can't talk to each other. Mm-hmm. We're talking. We're listening. We're making sense. And talk creates action. I think that's where we are right now.
Right
Baba Oshie, let somebody else
All
get
right
in and speak, and I'm going to listen. You know I'm right here, man.
Right on. Appreciate you, man. That's
yes,
my,
sir.
That's my brother, man. I tell you.
Yes, sir. My man, Oshie.
We're going to take a break. We come back from the break, and you stay with us in the conversation. We're talking today, well, not today, but a couple of days ago was Nat Turner's birthday. And We must talk about Nat Turner. Yeah. And when we come back from this, I'll tell you why. All right. So let us get this going, okay?
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Memphis Soul Stew. We sell so much of this, they gonna make some Frisco hot stew. Give me about a half a teacup of base. That's our bass player from Macon, Georgia, Gerald Jamont. And now we need a pound of fat back drum. Bernard Purdy, ladies and gentlemen, on the drum. And four level tablespoons of ball in Memphis guitar now. Carnell Dupree from Fort Worth, Texas, on the guitar. A little pinch of organ. If we're gonna make Memphis Soul Stew, it's just a little pinch of Memphis horn. Memphis horn. Of Mississippi Conghetto. Joe Morales, ladies and gentlemen, the Conghetto. Now I need a half pint of horn.
to get just right. And then you beat. Well.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. King Curtis, recorded at the Fillmore West in 1971, Memphis Soul Stew. He brought together some dynamic people. Billy Preston on organ, Cornell Dupree. Yeah, some really good people, and that's outstanding. Memphis Soul Stew, 1971. We're talking today about Nat Turner, and I was mentioning the fact that it is important. You know, prior to the mid-60s, all the way from the times that we started to go to schools around this country, all the way up into the mid-50s, and then into the beginning of the 60s, you never, they might have told you about a specific American African individual, George Washington Carver, Booker T. Washington. Yeah, most definitely. You heard about them. But you sure wasn't going to hear about nobody who resisted, nobody who rebelled. You sure in the hell wasn't going to talk about or learn in public schools or maybe even private schools, unless there was a school where an American African was serious about learning the history of our people, to talk about Nat Turner. No, you weren't going to learn about Nat Turner. You weren't even going to learn about Harriet Tubman. You weren't going to learn about those who resisted, those who rebelled, those who challenged, those who killed. No, No, we're not teaching about those. Because even when we had, and I was in school at that time, when it finally happened across this country, people were walking out of school for black studies. It was adamant that black studies be put into the curriculum. This is all in the latter part of the 60s. The early 60s, no. The mid 60s, but the latter part of the 60s and into the 70s. This is when it happened. And that's why it's important. I don't know what, I know that what I used to do when I would go to these schools, when I was going to schools in Milwaukee on my off day as a firefighter, we work 24 hours on, 48 hours off, 1 day on, 2 days off. On my 2 days off, during the week of Monday through Friday, I would visit some schools and have the opportunity to talk with some students. A lot of time, the students I dealt with were those who were most challenged. And I dealt with sisters and brothers. Sometimes it was the classroom of a teacher. But I know what I was going to give them. And I used to tell them, I'm going to give you something that you're not going to get here in this institution. I'm going to teach you some things and show you some things that hopefully will elevate your mind. You know? Because I firmly believe that the more you know of yourself, it's just like the quote that I stated yesterday from the, well, it's not Rinoco's quote, but he's the one who presented it on the Tariq Nasheed's documentaries, Hidden Figures, or Hidden Colors, excuse me, Hidden Colors series. But he said, what you do for yourself depends upon what you think of yourself. And what you think of yourself depends upon what you know of yourself. And what you know of yourself depends upon what you have been told. Yeah. What you have been told. And of course, it has been, and it still is, that the European, the Caucasian, the Yorugu have had a desire to stymie African people, and particularly to deny them of who they are and what, and so they want to do the telling. It's just like that Arab dude in Egypt. And let me explain that too. Hold on, let me catch brother Ted Lusk. Brother Ted, how you doing?
Good morning, Bubba
Oshie. All right, good brother. How are you today?
Oh, man, just always listening and learning, brother. Thank you so very much. There's something that I've learned that I like to share with the listening audience, and I'd like to share. It's very short.
Please
this
do.
Is based upon the video, the YouTube video that you had displayed on Nat Turner.
Yes.
Which is interesting because in Virginia, the great state of Virginia, right, there's a marker called U-29 Blackhead Signpost Road.
Yes.
Let me just read the inscription. In August 1831, following the revolt led by enslaved preacher Nat Turner, white residents and militias retaliated by murdering an undeterminable number of African Americans, some involved in the revolt, some not, in Southampton County and elsewhere. At this intersection, where Turner's force had turned toward Jerusalem, now Cortland, the severed head of a black man was displayed on a post and left to decay to terrorize others and deter future uprisings against slavery. The beheaded man may have been Alfred, an enslaved blacksmith who, though not implicated in any revolt killings, was slain by militia near here. the name of this road was changed from Blackhead Signpost to Signpost in 2021.
Mm. And that's just recent. And, so it stayed Blackhead Signpost for over a century.
That's right.
As a reminder.
How about that?
As a reminder. That, yes.
And so it's information such as this that not just to be satisfied and with the YouTube piece that had been created as well as others as well, but to try to delve deeper into what has gone on. And with regards to myself, I always like to listen to and about Virginia history, because in the great state of Alabama, there's a connection, believe it or not, with that first 20 and somewhat enslaved Africans that was brought from the Western continent to the great state of Virginia and the great country of Africa, of course. Mm-hmm. But the last documented slave ship that was brought across the Atlantic wound up in Mobile/Africatown. So there's a connection, the beginning as well as the end. And so that's why when you mentioned about Nat Turner, I just kind of, I need to learn a little bit more.
Yeah.
And came across that information on Signpost Road, or now just Signpost Road.
Right on. I really appreciate that. Right on, family. Right on.
Very good.
All right, my brother.
We'll continue to listen, brother. Thank you.
All right. Peace.
Peace.
Good afternoon, Sister Abia. Good afternoon.
Hi, Eva. Hey, greetings. How you doing? Enjoying the program?
Thank you, Sister Abia.
And, disagreeing with a lot of what you all were saying, you and her. But I want to give a shout-out. We, give a tribute to the Honorable Nat Turner.
Yes.
I mean, what a revolutionary. Hmm. What a freedom fighter. You know how great he loves our people, how courageous he was. And so just give him a shout out to that, you know. And I was happy with what you said. We got to remember him and talk about him.
Yes.
Because he's so important and so phenomenal.
Yes.
You know, all the sacrifices he made for our people. And, you know, so I'm just saying shout out to Nat Turner. Thank you for bringing him up. It was like, we say Faraha Kusali was happy birthday to him. And you know, in his honor, we'll just continue to shine.
Right on. All right.
You know,
sister.
Fannie Lou Hamer's birthday is tomorrow. I mean, tomorrow, Saturday. So we have to give a shout out to that queen, that freedom fighter, that, you know.
Oh, most definitely. Fannie Lou Hamer?
Yeah.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah, tomorrow. I heard about you.
You know, I'm sick and tired. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Yeah.
But you know, my favorite quote of Fannie Lou Hamer is that never forget where you came from and always praise the bridges that carried you over. Sometimes that becomes emotional because it's so powerful for you to never forget who you are, where you came from. And praise those men and women who nurtured you, who motivated you, who inspired you, guided you, informed you. Always praise the bridges that carried you over. You didn't get here by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody helped open the way. So that to me is one of Fannie Lou Hamer's most dynamic quotes. And if
Very
you want
dynamic.
To talk about a woman that was a warrior, she was in the true sense of a warrior of Anandi, of all the warrior African warrior queens on the continent. She is in that mix, along with many other sisters, you know, who stood up. See, you weren't going to learn about Fannie Lou Hamer back in the day, although she was making that history at the time that the things began to change. You know, but once again, she fought against it. She stood up. So,
Very powerful.
We got to give Fannie Lou Hamer much love.
And much attributes, too. Mm-hmm. Ashe. You know, and I'll just briefly, there's a sister named Mia Matley. I was just listening to her. She's the Barbados minister, prime minister there.
Yes.
And she was saying some, you know, some strong things. She was talking about how, you know, she was lending support to Sudan and
yes.
how we have to, you know, work on their behalf, fight on their behalf of what's going on. She was saying that the UN is, you know, they just exclude the African nations. And she said she was calling for a halt to that, too.
Yeah.
And so that was interesting. And then the other sister, Malina Abdullah, and she's running for the vice president, and she was talking about how they have their own black slate, and so
and she's running for what? Where?
Vice president. Yeah.
Of what?
Of the United States. I mean, she's on the ticket. She's on the ticket with the other brother.
Cornel West.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, she's running with Cornel West. Okay.
Yeah. She said a lot of powerful, a lot of powerful things. She was talking about their own black slate, and she was talking about reparations, the debt owed, and she said they were the only candidate.
See, to me, that's cool. You know she doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell, but what she can do and what he can do is articulate the issues that are affecting our people. Kamala's not going to do it. She's shown hell they ain't gonna do it.
She's calling her out. Kamala's going, yes.
You know, so therefore, and of course, there are no more debates. But if she gets the opportunity,
They said they have another debate. Oh, see, they said October 23rd. They have another debate. Oh, trifling Trump agreed to another one on the 23rd of October.
Really?
Yeah, it just came out today.
Oh,
he's gonna get his butt kicked again. But anyway,
he's going to do that.
Just came out today.
Okay, family. I tell you. All right.
Let me ask you one other thing, though. Did you hear about the brothers and sisters in the Dominica kicking out, deporting the Haitians? They deporting them back to Haiti?
In the Dominican Republic? They've been dogging out our Haitian people for a long time, sharing that island. And they only got that island because the Haitians had the whole island. They got that island because of the Spanish and the United States. United Snakes. That's how they got that half of the island. And then, of course, most of the people still are African, even in the Dominican Republic, you know, but because they are lighter with hair and so forth and so forth. They've always felt they were better and discriminated tremendously against Haitian people. They would there are areas where Haitians can come into the Dominican Republic and do some vending, but they gotta have their ass out by sundown, you know. So yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah, Dominican Republic.
Recently, because they were having a lot of Haitians that were going up there, migrating up there because of the so-called unrest in Haiti right now.
Yeah.
And so thousands of them went there. So they just mass deporting them out in a real.
That's not way. They've been doing that. So that's nothing. That's nothing new.
Yeah. I mean, but just mass and just think about it, you know, right at this time.
Well, it's just rounding them up. I know
rounding
that
them up, right.
I mentioned this. Brother Kwaku, I was by Brother Kwaku's house, and he had a piece of video of some Africans in France being corralled. They're in a gated area, and they're being beaten. The police officers have riot gear on, and they have their nightsticks out. And they just beating these brothers, just beating them. And many of them not even putting up a resistance, and they're just constantly beating. Some look like they are dead. You see a lot of blood. I mean, it's how we are treated globally. Sister, how we are treated globally is because we are not unified. And if we had unity, we would stop all of that shit.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that and the main reason is because they're such a monster, too. They're the main culprit. They're just so decadent and diabolic.
So,
just like Mama Marimba said.
So, I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, Abifa Lahodia and
Abifa Lahodia. All right, sister.
And long live the spirit of Nat Turner.
Ashe. Long live the spirit of Nat Turner. Ashe. All right, sister. Peace. Good afternoon.
Hey, what's up, Oshie? Put me on hold for a minute and come back to me.
All right. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And, of course, you know there's a lot of you, there, a good number of you are still in the queue. Hit star twice and you can get in. Good afternoon, Brother Irv.
Hey, Brother Oshie, I hate to cut in. I just wanted to say something really quickly. You said something, Brother Love said something about Nat Turner and how they went and just wholesale killed American Africans because of Nat Turner. They just went and grabbed him. He had nothing to do with it and killed him.
Right.
And you know, Arugu doesn't change his playbook. Arugu did. You remember years ago when a white woman ran the car off the bridge and killed her children.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they went into the American African neighborhood and rounded up black people. Yeah. Just rounded up black men, you know, just harassing them. You know, the same exact didn't actually kill any of them, but it was the same process.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just go grab was he black? Good. Well, let's just grab all the black people we see and hold them and detain them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what if you had a job to go to? What if you were taking care of your family?
You lost
your
job.
What if you were having a baby? Come on, Baba Oshie.
Too bad. You lost your job.
Yeah, too bad. Tough. These Caucasians are just, do the same thing. And like I said earlier, we need to study this psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't need to study us. Yeah. We need to study him.
Listen to this, man. Listen to this. You know, when Jack Johnson was boxing and Jack Johnson was whooping these Caucasians' ass, Caucasians would get pissed. Even though brothers, you know, really, you know, would, you know, feel good about Jack Johnson whooping them Caucasians' ass, and believe me, he was giving some of them guys a pounding. But what was detrimental was the backlash of Caucasians would be walking down the road, and here he is. I send my son to take to his aunt some soap and some greens or whatever. And it's about a mile and a half down the road. He should be back by now. He should have now been back. We find him tied to a tree, limbs cut off and so forth. Just because. And that's how evil these people have been. You know, that's how evil they have been. And so that's, you know, when Jack Johnson, would win the fights, they would retaliate in that manner. And it's the same thing that they would do even up until today's time. Because they would retaliate. Man, I tell you, boy, these people ain't.
Yeah, Baba, it was so bad with Jack Johnson. I know a little bit about that story.
Mm-hmm.
It was so bad with Jack Johnson. So once he beat the white man up, and he fought something like 40 rounds, I mean, and beat that up, they had to put a trap door in the ring so that he would be able to get out of the ring through a trap door.
Yeah.
That's how demonic the white people were, because see, white people understand the power of imagery, and it's like you said earlier in the broadcast, you don't see black people in a rebellious state in a movie. You never see black people fighting back. We're always on the porch laughing and dancing and singing, you know, like good times, and having a good time in the projects. There's no good time in the projects. If it was such a good time in the projects, why didn't all the white folks move to the projects?
Mm-hmm.
So that the imagery is what white people understood. They understand that if a little white boy sees a black man beating a white man, he's going to believe that that black man is stronger, that black man can overpower him. And this is what white folks don't want to have in the psyche of their children. See, Baba Oshie, They not coming for you, Baba Oshie. They ain't coming for me.
I'm done. We old. We done.
They're coming for the children.
Yeah, we'll be phasing out.
They're coming
of here soon.
For the.
Mm-hmm. And we'll be phasing out of here soon. So yeah, you're right. The minds of the children.
And if we as elders who are here for counsel, not for war, for counsel, if we don't counsel these young people and let them understand, don't just. I understand you're standing on the shoulders of your ancestors, but we also have to understand that the history is your foundation. It gives you footing. If you stand on what Dr. Henry Clark said, if you stand on Amos Wilson's words, you won't fall because they give you a foundation to stand on. There's nothing you can say to me that I can't answer back to you, Baba Oshie.
Mm-hmm.
I have an explanation for... Ruku Rashid gave us explanations for things. You know, why was this like this? I didn't know the Nile River didn't flow north to south. I didn't know that. So I started looking in his pictures and reading. So nah, Baba Oshie, I'm so glad you're talking about Nat Turner today. I don't know. And she brought up Fannie Lou Hamer, I don't know if that lady was stupid or fearless. Because she didn't give a damn about white people to their face.
Yeah.
And that was back when she could be hung. Her family could be hung for that.
Yes.
She was fearless.
Yeah.
I mean, she didn't wait for the man to come home. She stood up. She went to Washington. I mean, this lady didn't have a PhD or any D's. She just knew what was right and what was wrong.
And she stood
and
on
she
what
moved,
was right.
And it moved her.
Yep.
Baba Oshie. Go get somebody else, Bob. I just wanted to say that.
All right, bro. Thank you. And it's just like Ida B. Wells, you know, and I know they had the Ida B. Wells home in Chicago, and Ida B. Wells settled in Chicago, leaving Memphis because they were going to kill her. They were definitely going to kill her, but she was courageous and she was fearless, you know. And there are some sisters and brothers who are in our history who are just like that, who didn't give a damn. They're going to call it for what it is, you know. And so, go ahead, brother. Go ahead.
Hey, listen, man. Fannie Lou Hamer is one of the greatest African women to ever walk this country, man. The way she stood up to the brutalization of them crackers where she came from is unbelievable. I mean, you know, and she wasn't, as they say, a well-educated woman. She had, I think, a third or fifth grade so-called education. But you know, her level of common sense and mother's wit is just basically astonishing. You know what I mean? She just understood a principle that white people, in all truthfulness, don't understand, right from wrong. Mm-hmm. It's like these white folks don't believe in right from wrong unless it's their right, man. And until we get to the point to where as we separate ourselves from these people, we just going to be in this same quagmire, man, because this is not a situation where things are getting better for black people in this country. You know, I mean, if you've been here as long as we've been here and supposedly built this country and all of this, I try to understand. Why is it that there's nothing in this country that we control? There's nothing in this country that we dictate how the country moves forward and that we could basically shut it down by passing the drum. I mean, you know, I mean, at some point in time, we gotta realize, man, maybe this is not what we need and where we need to be to move forward as a people, because
you got that right.
Like I said, the reality is, you know, what could you stop what could you control to the point to where if it doesn't go your way, then it shuts down? I mean, just look at what happened with this Law Shoreman strike that just happened over these last couple of days. I heard they got a 63% raise. That's unheard of, man.
It's over like a 6-year period, so it's like 10%.
Don't make well. Yeah. That's unheard of. 10% raise. I mean, I
agree.
Just the fact that you could be in a situation to really, really shut it down. Now, mind you,
and
people don't realize that if this clown gets in the office, things like this is not going to be able to take place and happen because the whole dynamics of the country is going to change. And, you know, the thing is this. I was talking with a good friend of mine last night, and we were talking about this whole situation about the immigrants from Haiti. If this clown get back into office, now listen to what I'm saying, that is supposedly now be legal citizen, he's going to sign an executive order removing their so-called citizenship and deporting them. And like my man was saying, well, he can't do this because they're legal citizen. And I said to him that maybe he can't do it, and what will happen is someone will take it into the courts, and maybe it'll get to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court may say, yes, he can do it. And from my understanding, this is just my understanding, and I may be wrong, the last word in this country, it seems to me, is the Supreme Court. So if the Supreme Court says that he could do it,
he
could do it. The only thing, let me finish. Oh, please.
No, you go ahead. I got to get some other callers, Jay. Go ahead. Finish your point.
All right. I'm going to finish right quick. The only thing that could stop him is the Congress or the Senate maybe passing new laws, and then maybe that could also be challenged. So the realization is, he may be able to deport so-called American citizens, and we, under the illusion that we live as a people, don't think it could happen. But we'll see.
We'll see. Thank you, my brother.
All right,
Jay. Yeah. Yeah. It's not. It's going to be surprising. Or it shouldn't be surprising. Of what's going to happen in the next month or two, especially if this man is elected, and it's a good possibility that could happen, although I don't believe it will happen, but hey, you know, it could happen, and if it does happen, well, yeah, let's see what happens then. You know, for me personally, I'm not voting, I'm not advocating or promoting voting. You know, I know that Kamala Harris is not going to do, her administration, if it's voted in, is not going to do any more than what previous administrations have done, Barack included. You know, the fallacy of Trump was things were done better economically. It's a bull. It's a lie. But people want to believe that he had better control of the borders. You want to believe that? But the bottom line is he is terrible. He's a terrible man. You know. So we'll see, family. We'll see. Give us a call. We're talking today about Nat Turner. We're talking today about Nat Turner. And his birthday was a couple of days ago. And how important Nat Turner is, and how we need to understand who he is. You know, Yeah. That's the first time I heard that. I saw that in the documentary I played earlier. And then, of course, Brother Ted Luss mentioned it, you know, that, you know, their retaliatory measures, there's some very, it's the same as Israel. Same as Israel. You know, if you kill one of ours, we're going to kill 100 of yours. Men, women, and children. And they gonna, I mean, they give less than a rat's ass about what they do and how they do it. And don't care about who they got to deal with. America, the United Snakes, is Israel's biggest supporter. In fact, I've always used the analogy that Israel was a pimp, and America is this hoe, is this prostitute. Oh, here's my brother. Brother Paul, good afternoon. How you been, man?
Good afternoon, Baba Ochi. How have I been? Well, I'm alive, so I have to give thanks for life always, Baba Ochi. You know, that's it, you know?
Right on.
How have I been? You know, if I can get up each morning and I can take a deep breath, I'm fantastic, man.
Right on.
I've got no health issues as such, you know what I mean? You know, I just give pleasure in being able just to see this beautiful, beautiful planet and enjoy the systems on it, you know?
Right.
The only
on.
Problem is some of the people.
That's what it is. That's what it is. Well, brother Butch out there in New Mexico was asking about you, man. He enjoyed
well,
you.
Well, yeah. I heard that, and it's funny, Bubba. Well, it's funny, and it isn't funny, because I actually, if Baba Butch is listening, I actually saw, you know, I made some requests for our elder to be assisted. Maybe he can go on WhatsApp, because that's the easiest form of communication.
Yes.
And
yeah.
To be honest with you, I've been so tied up, but I should have made a better effort. Mm. But I did see him on his number come up on not WhatsApp, the other platform. And I did ring.
Okay.
And I know that platform, if sometimes if you're not connected to the Wi-Fi, depending on how you set it up, it doesn't go through automatically. But somebody sent a message back. I don't know if it was our elder, sent a message back, like in the form of a question mark, like as if to say, who is it? And I sent a message, but I don't think the person has looked at the message. I don't know, you know, because I know, obviously, he may not be familiar with that platform. Someone might have put it on his phone for him.
Okay.
But
okay.
I was speaking with our brother Kwaku just this week about
about this,
and I'm going to appeal to our brother's good conscience to guide our brother through so we can make a communication, because it's very important. I did hear him, Baba Ochi, and you know, and he knew what I have to say. And I have to put out in the ether.
Mm-hmm.
Baba Butch is special.
Yeah.
And special because when he made, he said, just, I heard him say, he don't know me. I would absolutely respectfully, humbly and respectfully disagree slightly with my elder. He knows me. He does know me. You see, why I say that, because we, indoctrinated to think that you have to actually meet the person in the physical to know them, but in our ancient times that wasn't the case. We knew each other, not because we met in the physical. Look, you know, even the ancient, say that we call them the ancient Egyptians, they give about, I think it's maybe 8 forms of energies which exist on this planet, maybe more, maybe less. And each of these energies inhibit man and woman. No. Yeah? Sebet, et cetera. I can't name them
okay,
all.
Right, I know. Yep.
You know what I'm mm-hmm. talking about.
I know what you're talking about. Yes.
You know exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Now, the ancient Kemetians, I should call mm-hmm. them, they gave them 8 energies.
Right.
Right? So if you're tuned in, Marcus Garvey said he can come back in the wind, didn't he?
Right, to in the whirlwind. Exactly, in the whirlwind. Right. Look for me in the whirlwind.
Yeah, but people take that because we've been indoctrinated literally. Our so-called education indoctrination is a literal education, meaning that when you say red, you know, he writes down red, he tells you what red is. But red doesn't appear red the same to everybody. You do know that. You absolutely understand what I'm saying to you. What you see as red, like, for instance, let me give you an example. You might be looking at color and someone tell you it's pink, but to you it looks red. And you will argue, they will tell you, no, that's pink, or they will say it's purple. And you say, no, that's red. The point I'm trying is, what it is, you're all right. Because you think you're seeing a literal color. You're not seeing a literal color. You're seeing frequency. What's emanating is the light bouncing off that. It absorbs everything and reflects what you see. So you're just seeing the energy, but you actually think it's the color, because that's how the indoctrinating. And what I'm trying to explain to you is that you do know me, because you know me through my energy. Because when he broke me down, when he explained some things, I knew he knew me, because what he was saying was absolutely right. So that tells me he's a very special person, because it tells me that he knows himself, absolutely knows himself, absolutely. Because you can't make them judgments unless you know yourself. And going back to Kemet as well, they found on the tombs, writing over the tombs, man, know thyself. Am I lying,
yes.
Baba Archie?
Yes, man, right? Know thyself.
Kemet.
Yep. Well, above all.
Is that not a 20,000-year-old thing, man, know thyself. Now, yes. I said today in 2024, most of us don't know ourselves. So, right. Of course they don't. They don't even know themselves. How are they going to know you? You can be living with a partner for 30 years, and that partner turn around and say, I didn't really know that person, yeah? The reason why they didn't know that person, because they don't know themselves.
Right.
Simple as that.
Right. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So everybody's looking outside themselves. They're looking all over the world for a solution, but that solution really is in themselves. So, you know, I heard his words. Words are very powerful. I listened very attentively. And I said, wow, this man's very special. He's telling me about myself. And he knew exactly what he said is absolutely true. Absolutely true. And most times, you can tell who a person is just from their words. You can just, most times the people's own words betray them and they don't even know. They're talking, and they don't even know that their own words are actually betraying who they are and what they're really about, whether they're telling you the truth or not, whether they're lying. You can tell a person's not don't know themselves when they keep contradicting themselves, when they're a bag of contradictions. I'm just saying the truth. I'm just saying.
Right.
I'm not trying to put anyone down. I'm just saying the energy. Going back to our great elder, our great warrior, you know, about this program. You know, I don't know enough about our great elder, the warrior you talk about, Nat Turner. I don't know enough about him. It certainly wasn't taught to us in school.
Right.
It's someone I only came familiar with on my conscious journey.
Right.
I learned more recently than ever that he was a mixed race man. Is that true?
No.
Okay.
No.
Someone said he was mixed race. I think his father was white. No, that's not true.
No. His father was African, but he was not deeply melanated, supposedly based upon what I've read, you know, but he wasn't considered mulatto. He was not a mulatto, if you want to use that term. Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. But there again, the things I've heard, and I have to, like I say, put my hands up and say, I haven't really read and studied enough about this great warrior, but I know he was a warrior. The things I've heard, and I know without reading, he was a strategist.
Mm-hmm.
He was a deep strategist and probably a deep thinker.
Yes.
I've heard that he was into photography as well. He liked his picture being taken. And that even says something to me as well. Because it's almost as if you're thinking ahead. The you know, we a lot of these people from time beyond, we can't hear their voices. We don't, sometimes some of them, we don't even have their images. But some of them knew it was important to leave a record for the future. Mm-hmm. It was important. It was they weren't just doing it for the time they were doing it in. They were strategic. They were thinking ahead. How many of us are thinking ahead today? How many of us are planning 100 years ahead and thinking that what we're doing today is going to have an effect on the people to come? And for me, when I think about these great, these people who make these great commitments, these are the things where I really appreciate. I really, really sink home. Not just that they made that, the commitments and the sacrifices, is that what they left behind. And I do acknowledge that we stand on their shoulders. And that's where, you know, mm-hmm, I hear mm-hmm. people say, I suppose it's a diplomatic way of saying you're passionate. Some people say you're emotional. Some people say all kind of crazy things. But the reality.
Brother Paul. Brother Paul.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know what's happening with this phone. Sorry.
All right. Okay.
I think about these people's sacrifices, the sacrifices they make, and it for me, I know people say it's passionate, but it makes me feel that we have no alternative but to do what we've got to do.
Right.
How can we allow people to make these sacrifices on our behalf and think just because we go to prison for our commitments or because we may even lose our life for our commitments, that, you know, that's it. No, the reality of it is that they did it that we could have
right.
a sense of freedom.
Exactly.
And we must recognize that and acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm.
So that is where a lot of the time when I look at these figures, I get really frustrated because I don't feel today when I look at us as a people, I don't think we're that committed. I have to be honest, and it hurts me to say that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're that committed. I don't think we really acknowledge the level of commitment mm-hmm. to remove ourselves from the position we find ourselves in today. And sometimes, it pains me to say this, that I feel that we're going backwards.
Mm-hmm.
It really pains me to say this. And I want to be wrong. I want
right.
to be wrong. But sometimes I'm listening to people who I would say is quite versed in, like I heard this professor on the radio and she turned around and said the same thing, we're going backwards. And I thought, well, here's someone who's dedicated her life to academic studies and she's saying the same thing. So and it's not pleasing to hear.
Mm.
It's not pleasing to hear. You know, despite what's happening, to me, I don't really see that. Because I don't really see that level of commitment, that
right.
level of people are not really with. We've still got political prisoners and sitting in jail, sitting in just while we get on with our lives and every day, they're mangling in jail for their commitments. So, you know, the last thing I want to say is free all political prisoners. Don't forget there are people today in your country
mm-hmm.
sitting in jail at the hands of these people while you get up and enjoy your life, breathe this air, and they're
right.
sitting in jail for our for
right.
us.
That's right.
And that's a powerful thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we mustn't forget them.
Right
we
on.
Must do everything we can to try and get them out of those conditions.
Right on. Well, listen, Brother
and
Paul.
You know what I'm talking about? I will commit myself, and we will speak. I will speak to the elder because I know he's a special elder.
Yes, he is.
And I must make that commitment.
Okay. Well,
absolutely.
I'm going to get his information, and I'll definitely pass it on to you and Brother Kwaku mentioned that he's going to help Brother Butch get on WhatsApp because you're right. That is the best way to communicate anywhere around
yeah.
the world, man. That's for sure.
It's going to happen in the next. Definitely.
Okay. All right, Brother Paul.
Thank you.
Thank you
for doing
brother.
What you're doing. Robert. It's a
All
serious
right.
commitment. Thank you.
Peace. Brothers and sisters, Brother Butch, are you still there? Brother Butch, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to close the program, so just hang on. Thank you. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep, that means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahorie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Have a safe and wonderful weekend, family, and hope to see you back here on Monday. Peace.